Okay, I think we'll go ahead and get started. Welcome, everybody. Congratulations, you made it to the last session of TechEd 2014. A round of applause for you. I hope it's been a good conference, and I hope this will be the session to really kind of round it off and give you some great go-dos, things to go home and start really putting into practice. So we have a great session. We have a mixture of, we have some video, we have some presenters from Microsoft, we have some people who've really done some of this stuff in the field, and some good demos. But mainly, we want to make sure that this session fits your needs. So hopefully you're here because there's something going on in your environment with Windows Server 2003, and we'll maybe dig into that a little bit, try and get you to tell us something about what's going on, but leave lots of time at the end for Q&A. So up here on stage, my name's John Allwright. I'm here with my colleague, Vanessa Boucher. And we're from Microsoft, and we work in the product marketing organization. So it's our job to really spread the word, make everyone aware that Windows Server 2003 is sadly coming to the end of its life, but also to start talking about the opportunities, the ways to migrate, and where you can migrate to. We're also very lucky to have Pete Zerger, who some of you will be familiar with. He's an MVP and a BTSP in our cloud and data center infrastructure, author of at least 5 or 6 books, and Pete will be really leading you through most of this session. But we also have Dave Irwin, who is from BlueStripe, who's going to show us some of their technology that really helps around the discovery phase. So here's the journey we're going to go on. We'll talk a little bit about what end of support means, and then help you to start thinking about a migration process in terms of discovering what you have, assessing it, where you can target those workloads, and then actually doing the migration, and then we'll go into Q&A. And our goal today, and rely on you to help us get there, is to let you have a blueprint to start planning and migrating your Windows Server 2003 applications, if you haven't started doing that already. So, do we have any French attendees in the audience today? No? Okay. Let me ask you a question. Does anybody know when Windows Server 2003 support is due to end? July the 14th? 2015, yes. So, not too far away. So, up on the screen, does anybody know what this represents? The French Revolution. Very good. Some points to that man. So what went on with the French Revolution? Well, the old regime really let things go for too long without addressing a bunch of problems. And you can see what happened here. Storming of the Bastille, July the 14th is Bastille Day in France. And we want to try and help you not achieve this situation where, you know, everything is going up in flames and things really have got to that stage. We know that a lot of you are actually kind of moving along. You're aware of the end of support. What's the awareness like in your organizations? Can I show your hands? Is your boss aware of 2003 end of support? Supportive? Keep your hand in the air. Excellent. So there's still a bunch of people that need to convince their bosses, and we have a little video that maybe will help move things along. It's not really intended for this audience, but it's intended to drop some of those messages in. Let's take another show of hands. Who has 2003 in their estate today? So, and people that didn't put their hands up, you might be at the wrong session. Or maybe you're just looking for somewhere to sleep. I don't know. So those of you that do have it, let's see who has more than 50 servers. More than 100? 500? 1,000? Oh, I feel sorry. And I'll stop there, unless Pete wants to keep going.
Sorry, man, that's rough.
Okay, and who's actually started their migration? Okay, so that looks about half the hands. So those of you that haven't started the migration, this is confession time. But is there anything in particular that's stopping that? At the back. 32-bit migrations. Excellent. So, yeah, of course, with the newer versions of Windows Server, we're looking for a 64-bit architecture. Anybody else?
Application teams that don't understand how their application works, hence they can't migrate it to a newer platform.
Fair. So I repeat that. So basically, you have applications running that support the business. Nobody knows how they work, or they came from an ISV, or, you know, software vendor that doesn't exist anymore. So they're a bit of a mystery. Anybody else?
Funding.
Excellent. So people are going, well, it's the end of support, but what benefit do I get from moving? And we also need to look at what's the downside of not moving, so we'll talk about that. One more at the back there.
NT4.
Could you elaborate, or do you know where? It's still out there. Okay.
I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah, the NT4 session is next week. Okay. We won't be there. Cool. So at that point, let's roll the video, and I'll hand over to Vanessa to talk you through some of the
Listen,
details.
We hate to break it to you, but on July 14th, 2015, Windows Server 2003 reaches its end of life, which means all support is history, and you're going to need a plan, plain and simple. Why, you ask? Well, end of support means no patches. This includes security updates, like the 37 critical ones applied in 2013 alone. No safe haven. Physical and virtualized instances will be vulnerable to any and all new security threats. And no compliance. Companies that continue to run Windows Server 2003 will start to fail standard compliance audits. The time to move is now. And since you'll inevitably have to move, waiting is both expensive and risky. Now, it isn't all doom and gloom. Leaving Windows Server 2003 is an opportunity for change. In the data center, advances in Windows Server 2012 give you virtualization of compute, storage, and networking, along with enterprise-class scalability and increased performance. Cloud options like Microsoft Azure and Office 365, as well as the Cloud OS network, deliver applications faster, reduce CapEx, and increase productivity. Why expose your business to unnecessary risks? Open up a new world of IT. Take advantage of this opportunity and begin your migration today.
All right, well, hello everyone. My name is Vanessa Boucher, and I probably met some of you out on the expo floor if you came by. We still have gum left over, so come by and get gum, but I think we're done after this. So I'll just be putting gum out on the side of the road, and you guys can take some gum home with you. But it's so great to be here. Thank you for staying for the very last session. From that video, obviously, you know, this is going to be a technical breakout session today. We're not going to be showing you all of our marketing materials, but I just do want to remind 425 days remaining to the end of support. That means roughly an optimistic estimate on your server migration is roughly 200 days, 300 plus days for your application migration. For this breakout session in particular, we're going to be focusing on application migration. We're going to be actually answering some of the questions that you have about application compatibility and things that you can do to actually move it over. We'll be talking about 34 versus 64 bit. So all of those questions should be answered today in some shape or form. As the video mentioned, I think that we all understand the severity. Who here doesn't think, I'm going to ask that question, that Windows Server 2003 end of support is not an issue? Wonderful. I'm going to pass through this slide. So you've got it. But the fact is that I talk to a lot of individuals that are in the IT industry today, and they're actually not understanding that this is a pivotal time. And it's not just a pivotal time to move over to Windows Server 2012. We want you to understand that this is an opportunity to transform. When I think back to 2003, and I wasn't in IT at that time, and I think about the way that I did business as an end user. I had my phone with its little black and gray, black and green face where I could store my numbers in. I remember when I could store numbers, that was really awesome. I remember I also had my Palm Pilot, and I remember the first time I actually got to swipe my Palm Pilot up to a coworker and exchange my information. That was amazing. And then I also had my MP3 player. So here I am juggling my three devices, none of which are connected, none are which supported, and that was back in 2003. That was the technology. Now today, I'm on my cell phone. I can have a full-on conversation with a PowerPoint presentation, talking to people around the world at the exact same time, and I can be connected to my corporate resources and pull up anything on corporate domain. It's amazing. I mean, if we just take a minute to look back, that the way technology has grown and changed our lives, and now that we're moving forward as Microsoft, as a services and device company, there's so many things to take advantage of, and we look forward to having you come along with us on this journey into 2015 and beyond. So what we're really going to be looking at today, and we're putting this into buckets to help with your planning in a way for you to create your roadmap. The way that we're looking at the migration process is these four buckets. We have discovery, which is cataloging and looking at your software and workloads that are still running on 2003 today. And then assessment, how do we look at each one of those, put them into buckets, identifying those that are easy to migrate, those that are going to be upgraded, or those that maybe we're going to have to rebuild or retire or refactor. Then we're also going to be looking at our target. And finally, the migration. Today we have some really great demos on actually doing the migration in new ways maybe that you're not aware of. So we'll be looking at those. The other thing that I want you to understand is that we have a lot of partners that are working with us, obviously two that are up here right now, and they are dedicated to assisting all of our customers with getting off of Windows Server 2003. So I do, if a lot of you have already done your discovery and assessment maybe today, but if you haven't, we have great system integrators, do-it-yourself tools that are available to you, as well as Premier support if that's something that you're taking advantage of, as well as for the assessment. You might also, after this session, want to go back and look at the applications that you've identified on 2003 and perhaps take a different look at how you're going to be moving those forward onto a new platform. Third, target. Talking to a lot of people about where they're actually going to be landing these applications. Obviously, Windows Server 2012 R2 or Microsoft, that's where we're hoping you're going to be taking these, putting them into a virtualized environment using Hyper-V. But also Microsoft Azure is a great resource for you, especially if you have developers that are in-house that are most definitely going to have to probably shim some of those applications. Where are they going to be doing so? Maybe looking at Microsoft Azure Platform as a Service is a great place to look at how you actually rebuild that application. CloudOS Network, what the heck is that? We have many service providers or hosting entities that are part of Microsoft CloudOS Network that are dedicated to assisting you with getting off of Windows Server 2003. We have a website, which we'll share at the end of this session, where you can go and you can actually find out about the offers that they have to assist you. And then Office 365. Why are we talking about Office 365 in this, this type of breakout session? SharePoint and Exchange. Probably two of the workloads that all of you are managing. I'm not sure if it's still in 2003, but if it is, you should really be looking at Office 365 as the targeted destination for those two workloads. And finally, migrate. We'll be looking at the actual migration today, as I mentioned, and obviously reach out to your partners, because all of them right now are spinning up great offers to assist you, as we only have 425 days to end of support or Bastille Day. So get your croissants ready for that date. All right, well, with that, I'm going to now turn it over. We're going to get started into the actual discovery phase, and we have some great demos on how you can actually look at discovering and assessing the applications that are within your environment.
Great. Thank you, ma'am. Can you hear me in the back row okay? I can't hear myself. Good. So discovery is the first step in the process, right? And somebody near the back there mentioned that part of our problem frequently is we don't know how the applications work. The developers that wrote the apps are gone. They're in-house apps that may not even be used anymore. It's not uncommon that we find 2003 servers sitting in a rack, those little pizza boxes, that aren't doing anything at all, right? So discovering what's out there and determining what needs to come forward is very, very important. So Microsoft has some great discovery tools of their own that we can use to start that process. And I'm going to talk about a few tools here, and I think the message I want to deliver is that multiple tools are going to be the best route. So the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, MAP, is a great start. That will probe your Windows boxes, Microsoft SQL, Oracle, MySQL, the LAMP stack in general, right? I can probe vSphere systems. That's really a Swiss Army knife of sorts. And any tool I use, I'm looking to get my data into a format that I can take and slice and dice in some fashion, right? So I'm looking to get that data into a CSV format or maybe some XML files or maybe straight into some sort of reference database. MAP is going to be great for that sort of exercise. but that's really just the first step. So MAP's going to help me do a lot of finding what is out there. It's not necessarily going to answer the questions around dependencies. Or with some of those in-house apps you talked about, what does this application talk to in terms of databases or business middle tier type systems? So you see in the third party tools column there are a number of tools out there for discovery that will some will help us discover not only the applications but the dependencies. Two that come to mind are the AppZero Pace tool and Dell ChangeBase. Some of these tools will help us not only identify the applications and the dependencies, but also compatibility. So things like ChangeBase and the Citrix tool set. So those are all going to be really important, identifying the applications, the dependencies for our multi-tier apps, finding how those tools talk to one another. And for the target systems, finding out if these apps are going to be compatible. So really we need to build our application catalog and determine how big that challenge is. So one of the holes we found early on was that thing in the middle I mentioned where we have to figure out what other nodes does this application talk to. You have some web-based app running on IIS that's been sitting there for a decade. Maybe you don't know what it talks to anymore. So discovering the conversations at a protocol level in some multi-tier fashion is going to be pretty tough. Certainly I can get down to the command line and do something like unscientific, like a netstat, right, and start surfing through ports. It's going to be a tough road. The map toolkit, I call that a good first pass because it's easy to install. I can put this on one virtual machine. I can run this from a desktop OS. I can install it in 5 or 10 minutes. It generates really nice reports. It actually generates reports that are suitable for my boss. So it has things like executive summaries and the fancy diagrams and so forth you see here. Frankly, I'm like you. I'm an engineer, so I'm really more interested, and I think Dave would say the same. We're more interested in just getting to the list, right? But Map puts a pretty wrapper on it just the same, which is kind of a bonus. What I want to pass the mic over to Dave to talk about is how we can do a better job at discovering our multi-tier applications and what components they're actually talking to. There aren't many tools out there that do a very good job of that. And Dave's going to talk to you about a tool that I use for in my monitoring life. I use it for a whole different reason. And one day Dave said, "Did you know that?" And that was sort of that aha moment for me when I realized, okay, I can take this great tool I use for monitoring and I can use it for a whole nother purpose. So I'm going to hand the mic over to my colleague, Dave Irwin.
Thank you, Pete. So yeah, as Peter mentioned, obviously a lot of you guys have issues with not knowing what's on a server or what makes up an application. And so our product, I need to switch the thing here. There we go. So BlueStripe has a product called FactFinder. And what FactFinder is an agent-based product. So it's similar to, say, Operations Manager, where you install agents out on the servers you're interested in. And we have a central management server. And FactFinder will look at all the connections being made within a box and out to a box's dependencies to build a map like you're seeing here. So this is our demo environment. It's a relatively small environment. But I'm sure you guys can imagine, obviously, much larger environments and very crazy maps that are very difficult to manage. So out of all this map, and it is live, you'll see it move around a little bit here, FactFinder will automatically discover applications. Now, when I say applications, I mean multi-tier distributed applications. So you can see there over on the left, it's discovered a few, and we're going to look at the one helpfully named Critical SQL Server Application. So let's say you're tasked with migrating this application. You know that some of the servers on here are 2003. We need to move this, but we don't know exactly what shape it has. So FactFinder helps you out there. So out of all those servers you saw, you see this application just uses the servers you see here. So I'm going to double-click this to get a little more detail. So here again, all the boxes that make up this application. And if I expand it one more time here, you can see a bit more complication now. So now you can see all the stuff that's talking to this database. So the server I'm interested in that may decide, we look at this application, we're like, okay, we need to migrate. And in particular, we want to target this server here. This one is called Demo SQL 1. So a couple things you can do with this that'll help you. One is if I open this guy up, so like I said, we are an agent. We have a lot of data on the machine. But in particular, what I want you to see here is this list apps this machine participates in. So because FactFinder automatically discovers all the applications out there, it can tell you what all is on this machine. So I hear the story all the time about, you know, somebody has an old box and maybe it came from an acquisition or somebody didn't know, and they know it's there, they know lights are blinking on it, but they don't really know what's on it. So they're afraid to turn it off because they don't know who's going to yell at them when they do. So this list is the list of who's going to yell at you when you turn that box off. Ideally, you would do a little more planning and notify the owner of these applications and say, hey, we need to move this box. And this is whether it's going to be a migration to a new OS or a data center or, like Vanessa said, maybe you're going to push this out in Azure. Either way, if this box is going to move, I need to know what needs to go with it. Similarly, so once you have that idea of what applications a server is involved in and you have a shape of the app, you can also do a view in FactFinder based just on a server. So I can open up a view that's, and I'm sorry the resolution doesn't give you a whole lot on the screen here, but we can see all the dependencies in this box. Now, this is our demo environment, it's kind of limited, so there aren't a ton of dependents and dependent and servers, but you can imagine you may have many of these. And the key is, when you migrate this guy, you need to make sure that all those same connections go. So with FactFinder, you can get your view of your machine, and you can take a snapshot. You can also print out a report that lists all, so if list view, you can list all the dependencies. You can also have a visual representation. Then you do your migration. Now, FactFinder doesn't do the migration for you, but maybe move it over to a newer server in a new data center, whatever. And then you can take a snapshot of the new box and compare. Make sure, does it have all the same dependencies it had before? Is everything connected that was there before? All the same applications. You can also do a performance comparison. I haven't talked as much about that, but FactFinder has a lot of performance data as well. It can tell you how all these apps are responding. So ideally, when you move the server, you did it for a reason so that it hopefully should be performing better. So we can do a comparison report. You can also export this data to a database for a different tool. If you have different third-party tools or in-house tool you already use for this kind of comparison. And so again, the key for FactFinder is that this all happens automatically. So it didn't require any configuration. You don't have to tell it ahead of time what your applications are or who they talk to. It does this automatically. And so it's a great way to answer those questions if I don't know what's on this box. So lastly, you can also take this data, these kind of maps, and import them into Operations Manager to build distributed application views there if that's the tool you'd prefer to look at your application maps.
Good stuff. Thanks, Dave.
Sorry, one last thing. So I forgot to mention, I won't be able to stay to the end. So if you guys have any questions, feel free to ask Pete. Pete knows everything. So if by some miracle he can't answer your question, you can go to bluestripe.com and send us an email, and we can help you out.
Thanks for setting that expectation, Dave. I sure appreciate that. Great demo, by the way. Appreciate the effort. So let's talk a little more about assessment and compatibility. So what we want to begin to do is to build our application catalog, get an idea of what we have in our environment, to filter out in that first pass what we need to bring forward, what's mission critical and what can be retired, and start to sort things out into some categories, maybe by complexity and risk. So if you work, you know, particularly with some of the third-party tool sets from Dell and Citrix, you'll find that they do have some RAG dashboarding in there to help you with some of that. But what we want to do is to build a single version of the truth. We want to scan all of our 2003 servers, get all of that data into one place so we can slice it and dice it in some friendly format, if that's Excel or Power Pivot or SQL, and get some buy-in from our IT organization, from the business units around, you know, what the application catalog looks like and which categories these apps fall into. And we really want to begin to focus on the future state, you know, which apps we're going to carry forward, which apps are going to have compatibility issues. You know, in large companies, I see this problem addressed sometimes in some very unscientific ways. So certainly a tool like you know, Citrix DNA toolset or Dell ChangeBase are going to give you some insight into compatibility right out of the gate. You know, but it goes beyond that. So maybe you understand it's not compatible, and you might wonder, is there an upgrade available? Do we own that upgrade? I see unscientific activities like folks picking up the phone and dialing down vendors, right? So you're probably going to be doing some of that at least. And the first step to making that even possible is getting through that discovery process and normalizing the catalog so we have something of an application catalog that makes sense, is free of duplicates, has been sorted by criticality and need to migrate forward. The remediate column here is the place where all the real work happens, right? We have to look at those compatibility issues and begin to, for our in-house applications, think about going back and developing a new version, or some orgs will look and see if there's a third-party app that can replace that. You have to case by case, figure out what your migration strategy is going to be. With a lot of our larger customers, I find that they don't have vast amounts of application packaging resources in-house. It's not something we all do most of the time, right? Lots of application packaging partners with on-premises offices and offshore resources that can help ease that process. I like to start with the Microsoft way, which is the Application Compatibility Toolkit. So we've got some capability to do some of our own remediation with native Microsoft tools. But this is going to be the sharp end of the stick. There's no way for me to candy coat this and say that we have a silver bullet for this sort of activity. You're going to have applications that are supported. You're going to find some where remediation is possible, and you're going to find some others where a code change is going to be necessary. So I heard somebody mention 32-bit in the back row. That's going to be a problem, right? We do see some 32-bit apps that come straight up to 2012 R2, and they function in the Windows on Windows capability, right? You can go down in the SysWow area of the registry, and you can see that they are capable of functioning in that environment, but that's not going to be a universal reality. So figuring out early how big that compatibility challenge is going to be for your organization, how many apps, how critical, and what your budget is to address that problem is going to be really important. And that, in some fashion, is going to shape your strategy as you move forward. So Vanessa mentioned very rightly targets for our application migration. So most of our Server 2003 boxes are physical, yes? Show of hands, lots of physical. Some physical, all virtual, good mix, good for you. So we've got some 2003 VMs out there. The tool sets that we tend to work with don't care much about destinations. Windows Server 2012 R2 is going to buy you the best capability, the best performance, and the longest life until we have to repeat this process, right? So we'll all hope that we're working somewhere else when that day comes, maybe. Microsoft Azure is a great target as well. We stand up a site-to-site VPN. Azure becomes just like part of our corporate network, right? I can ping out. I can RDP it. I find that my customers today are using Azure a lot more than they were 2 years ago, and that they don't even notice that those VMs aren't on-prem. So Azure is a perfectly suitable destination. So Vanessa mentioned the CloudOS network, and this is one that doesn't come to my mind every day. So shame on me. There are a lot of Microsoft partners out there, hosting partners, that can give you your own private cloud hosted in their data center, which can take some of that operational load off of you. Means we're not spending cycles, ordering and setting up servers. We're just ordering some capacity and worrying about the problem at hand, migrating apps, discovering and sorting that out. How many Exchange 2003 shops out here? Anybody left? One. Man, I'm sorry. If I'd known you were going to be the only one, I wouldn't have asked, but that's okay. So are you keeping it on-prem, or are you going to O365? Okay, great, good for you. So no single right answer there, obviously. So going to Office 365 is a pretty popular answer for that problem these days. So talking about migration tools and techniques, I always say I like to start with the Microsoft way, right? So there's always a free, easy way that works most of the time. So there are some unscientific methods, like the vendor tells me there's a new version of the application and I install it and I move some data over. When I'm looking at IIS applications, that can be a little more challenging, right? When we're going from 2003, we're probably running on a .NET framework that's something like 1.1 or 2.0, and we're coming into the brave new world of 4.x. It makes me a little uncomfortable just thinking about it. Which means, I can use something like Web Deploy. So you all probably know Web Deploy as a great way to deploy web applications, right? Web Deploy is actually a great migration tool. So I did my first web server farm migration in 2002, because I'm quite old, with Web Deploy. It was all command line, a lot of batch file, but it allowed me to pick up an entire IIS instance and move it over to a modern version of Windows. It did require some manual steps. So my applications were calling out to databases through ODBC connections. So I had to go sort some of that out ahead of time. It helped that, you know, they were my apps, right? I knew what I was dealing with. I had to deal with my config files to change the default .NET framework, right? So I've got to sort that up to the top. If you have any encrypted strings in your config files, there's going to be some work you need to do there to unencrypt and get that sorted, right? I can't just pick it up and pull it across. We get into some of those areas that you talked about where things are a little less black and white. So you talked about in-house applications where your developers aren't entirely switched on in all cases in helping you make this transition. We talk about 32-bit applications where we're not really sure what, you know, that app is going to do, how it's going to behave when we get over to a modern version of Windows. So certainly there are several third-party tools that will help us when we get to the sharp end of the stick. That last, you know, it's usually 10, 20%. It's rarely a majority. But when we get to that last little bit and we need some help to move those applications over or to do a little more exploration as to their compatibility. So the Dell and Citrix tools both have, you have some capability there for migration. I use a tool called AppZero quite frequently that allows me to pick up an application and do a little testing before I actually make that that full leap. you know, whether you do this yourself or you call on consultants or Microsoft Premier Support or all of the above, I think is up to you. You know, by and large, I see my customers doing the easy part themselves in a lot of cases if they have the staff to sort sort through all of that with the level of scale that's required. So you know, we saw a couple of folks raising their hands with 1,000 servers. You know, in the real world, we've talked to folks with 3, 5, 10, even 15,000, 2003 servers sitting out there. So I wanted to talk to you for just maybe 10 minutes or so about the AppZero tool and how we can leverage AppZero as one of the options to bridge this gap. So AppZero is an agentless solution. It's an application you install on your destination machine. So if I'm going to, say, Windows 2008, hopefully you're going to 2008 R2 SP1. That's kind of the sweet spot for me. You know, 2012 and 2012 R2 are going to be even better. We install that application over there on the destination machine. It's a click, click, next sort of install. Two or three clicks, cut and paste a license key, it's done. What this application does is you point it back to your source machine there, which is going to be your 2003 system, right? And it's going to use well-known protocols, things like remote registry, like SMB, to probe that system and to identify the applications that are installed, the services associated with those applications, the security identities associated with those service accounts. It's going to look down into the registry, see all of that information, track those dependencies that will allow us to scoop up that application and to place it in a virtual appliance. Now, this virtual appliance, I call this the bubble. It's a temporary container that houses that application. So I can move that app over to my destination machine, and I can try it out while it's still in this bubble. I can you know, definitively test, will this application run on a modern version of Windows? Because you're going to have, in that rationalization process, some apps you know won't work, but then quite a few more that you're going to have no idea if they work or not. What I really like about AppZero for migrating IIS applications is it takes care of some of those manual steps that I have to work out with WebDeploy for me. So things like identifying what IIS components are needed on the target system. In fact, if I try to move a web instance or a website from 2003 to a modern version of Windows, if I forget something, it's actually going to tell me right there in the UI. It's going to say, hey, you forgot component X. It's going to do some of the work for me around the .NET framework version. It's going to take care of some of that config file manual stuff. Yes, sir. Okay, so let me just repeat to make sure I heard. Does it, that VAA, does it put all the pieces on the destination machine? That is a fantastic question. So it's not, AppZero is actually not application virtualization. That's really important. So while it's still in that bubble, it actually does lay those components down temporarily on the host operating system. If I go to, and I'll show you this in a live migration here in a minute, not to be confused with Hyper-V live migration. I will do an actual migration. Got to watch my words there. You'll look in the registry, and you'll see the registry keys that you saw in your source machine. You'll look in Windows in the Services Manager, and you'll see your service accounts there, because AppZero will actually migrate your service account if you need it to. but it's not application virtualization, and I think that's one of the most common questions that comes up, and really a good one. So what I have here is a Windows 2008 R2 SP1 system. So you know, I picked this absolutely at random. I have a lot of customers that are just now making their way into Server 2012. The bigger they are and the more process, sometimes it just takes a bit longer, right? So this could just as easily be Server 2012 R2. You know, sometimes I find that there are little differences between these operating systems that pop up as I test my migrations. You know, one of the things I think that comes to mind is on the Server 2012 R2 platform, IPv6 is usually lit up, and when I move applications like some of the open source database platforms, for example, I get them over and they choke on IPv6, so I need to go do a little reconfig on the app. So I'm going to launch AppZero's Tether console. So I spent 5 minutes and installed the Tether console. The Tether console asks me for the name of the virtual application appliance. So I've given it a Win 2003 ENT-1. All it's doing here is creating a folder down on the operating system where it's going to store the binaries that I'm going to pick up. Who was it that mentioned AppV just a moment ago? It was you, right? So there are some elements of this process that remind me of AppV, but I just want to be really clear that this is not application virtualization. So when I go down here, you'll see that I have appliances right there. So what I'm going to do is plug in the IP address. You could use the name if DNS name resolution is working. It's going to want the name of the local administrator password. And assuming I type that right, I'm going to tell it to find applications. So it's going out and probing remotely that Server 2003 system. So it's looking through remote registry, through SMB, identifying what's in add remove programs, now tracking down those dependencies. So what I'll look at here is something, I didn't want to go the easy route. I'm going to show you something not Microsoft, right? So you know I'm for real. We'll look at PostgreSQL 9.3, so a non-Microsoft type database. If I just check that box as the remote product I want to migrate, I'm going to go over to remote services. Now AppZero is going to take another look here, and it's going to show me the services related to this application. So again, I'm probing with well-known protocols. You guys know SMB requires some ports open on firewalls, right? So this doesn't work by magic through firewall. So, you know, just while we're getting all of the FUD out there. Now you'll notice here that the service is running as network service, so that's totally okay. If I had, say, a local service account, AppZero will actually move that for me, and what it's going to do is create another copy of that service account over on the target system. It's going to use a well-known password in the AppZero documentation, so it comes in really handy when you're dealing with super old applications and you have no idea what the service account password is. Doesn't matter. We can move it over. We know what that password is going to be, and we can change it after we get that moved across. If I have any remote accounts, on this tab, it's going to show me what those remote identities are before I attempt to do the migration. So I pick my remote product here, PostgreSQL. I've got the remote services. I want you to look, I want to just draw your attention to the bottom of the screen. You'll notice in red there, it tells me remote services have to be stopped before we migrate. We've got to remove the file locks, right? So nothing magic there again either. So it's going to let me stop the remote service on that system. So I do need to make sure I schedule the outage with folks, right? I'm going to now hit this button that just lit up, which will begin the tethering process. What this is going to do is what they call docking the application appliance. So it's going to start the process here so we can look at this application. I'm going to launch the application, and what happens here, so I'm launching a command line. And I'm going to browse to my application. So it's a little reminds me that I'm still in the world of 2003 here. I'm going to browse over to my applications and make sure that it's present and that it's running. So what I'm going to do is exercise the application. So when you think of App V, you think of sequencing an app and exercising. So the same sort of concept here. I'm going to migrate and exercise my app of sorts. So here I have my my PostgreSQL. So I'm on the local operating system here. So the physical files are here. If I launch Services Manager, I should see a PostgreSQL service sitting in there. It should be stopped, but it should be down in the P's, and there it is. So I've got my application over here, and I can begin to try to work out that application. So the only thing you hope is that you actually have your PostgreSQL front end installed here. So you want to grab the PG admin utility, it's called. So if you don't, and off the top of my head here, I don't even have it right there, so I'll do a quick, I'm going to show off my age here. So I'm actually just looking for my PostgreSQL my PostgreSQL utility here, so I can even launch my UI. Bear with me here, a little problem with my mouse. So if you drill down into your application, I actually don't see it here, so a little minor snafu with my demo. I'll come back to this. What's that? Actually it would be right here in my source, or in my target, rather. So I'm actually exercising this application on the target. That's sort of the magic here. I've got the application loaded on the target. Let me just do a... I'll just do a quick look while it's there. So we'll give that a second. But bottom line, what I'm going to do is basically launch the PostgreSQL UI and exercise the application by just opening it, making sure that the services will run, making sure that the authentication is successful, making sure that remote applications can connect to this system. There we go. So my services started now. If I come over to services, I'm on my target system here. I'm on my 2008 R2 system. There is, in fact, my PostgreSQL server now running on this system. Fire away. I heard a question coming there. So it's been copied over to the target system. It's actually present on the local machine. The files actually come to us through the discovery and build process of that virtual appliance. The virtual appliance is actually right here, and the files are right here as well. So I launch my application, I run it, and when I'm done with the tethering process, I just stop it, and my application is present. So this is not the sort of tool that you're going to need to use in 100% of your migrations or even 50%. It's typically going to be for those applications that are applications where we have some holes in our knowledge, or applications that don't migrate manually very effectively. So IIS is one of those that typically makes a whole lot of sense. I'm a little short on time, so I'll point you in the takeaways to the recorded version of this demo so you can see it in action. I wanted to talk to you about good candidates for migration, because you're going to run into a lot of applications out there, and what I'm going to call out here are certainly true for that AppZero tool, but I think this is universally true for most of the third-party tool sets that we're going to be working with, like Dell, like Citrix. Database platforms tend to be good candidates for migration. So Microsoft databases, third-party databases, I've seen IBM, I've seen MySQL, I've seen PostgreSQL all move successfully from 32-bit systems to 64-bit systems. So the App Zero component doesn't even really care about the architecture of your applications. What it cares about is that you have a server operating system on the source and that your destination is also a server operating system. That's going to be the important piece. There's an expectation that you're moving from 32-bit to 64-bit, which is actually totally 100% okay. A lot of the common application platforms, Apache, Java, Microsoft Dynamics, and WebLogic is one that comes up quite a lot. So these are all going to be great candidates. There's a few more, Drupal, MediaWiki for some of you open source folks, even desktop apps. So the App Zero component even will actually move desktop apps across from systems. I have to say that's a minority case, thankfully, in the world today. XP is behind us now, so we don't see a lot. So we wanted to throw this up here to talk about what's not ideal. So how many of you have legacy applications that are tied to specific pieces of hardware? Fax applications, any of that sort of thing? Not much? So if you run into those, you do want to be careful. You know, obviously, if the hardware is not present in the target, it's not going to go well, generally speaking. Active Directory, which is a component that's embedded in the operating system, not something we're going to attempt to migrate because it's core to Windows, right? You're going to go through the normal upgrade process to get from 2003 to 2012 R2. Exchange, same situation. We're typically not going to be trying to migrate an application of that magnitude or SharePoint. Most common destination for Exchange and SharePoint with orgs today tends to be Office 365 when they're trying to get out of this sort of situation. You can do it yourself. You can use partners. Microsoft services have as a service offerings that will help you do that, even on a self-service basis for fixed fees. And avoid antivirus or anti-malware applications. Certainly you can redeploy that from your central console, so System Center Endpoint Protection, Trend, Symantec, etc. No reason to try to migrate anti-malware apps. Any Bez users out here, speaking of old school? Any BlackBerry? Yeah. So moved a couple of Bez servers with App Zero. So you can pick those up because they're really just, at the end of the day, just a multi-tier application that's compiled. What I wanted to mention, I'm not going to take you all the way through an App Zero migration, but I wanted to mention that Azure is a great target. What I do find is Microsoft Azure is typically not a great target as a direct migration from my on-premises network with a tool like App Zero. So it creates this virtual application appliance, and I can compress this appliance and copy it up to my public cloud just by doing a little right-click and compress. It'll basically just zip that up. I can copy it up to Azure and use App Zero to expand and hydrate that application in Microsoft Azure at the end of the day. No reason you can't do the old-fashioned install, do the web deploy type migration with your applications and go directly to Microsoft Azure. It's mostly about making Microsoft Azure hospitable to your corporate environment, getting that site-to-site VPN in place. Do we have any Microsoft Azure site-to-site folks in here yet? Yeah, so a few, good. Very easy to do. I've got a $300 Cisco appliance sitting behind my desk that connects my house to Microsoft Azure. So something you can do quite easily, to be sure. Am I good? Oh wow. Okay. Well, then I'm way fast. Fine. So before I jump back in here in demo, give me some questions and maybe come up to the mic if you can. Give me some of your questions around app migration, app compatibility, any of that sort of thing that comes to mind.
Do you find people using 2008 R1 32-bit at all for some troublesome 32-bit apps?
Not as a first choice.
Well, it's nobody's first choice.
Yeah. So as a last option, if you have an app that's not compatible on 64-bit, sure.
To give them some more time.
Yeah, that's really what it buys you, right? It buys you a few years. Yeah, so I'd call it an edge case. If we find most of the 32-bit apps that we move over to a 64-bit target tend to be okay. But yeah, you sure could. Next question.
Yeah, hi. You mentioned that App Zero will migrate local service accounts. What if, due to PCI requirements, your application's running under 80 service accounts, and those passwords can't then go to some known password? Are there options for how those service accounts get migrated?
My option at that point would be to pre-create that account on my target system and to give it the password. So you're the first person that's ever brought that up. I've not actually encountered that, but in the real world, but that's how I'd do it.
Okay. Thanks.
You bet.
I know this is about Windows 2003, but does this program still work with Windows 2000 and the legacy application or legacy operating systems such as NT4 or NT351 even?
Yeah, so the fact that it's agentless, you can definitely probe 2000 systems. Terry, have you ever had anybody do an NT4 system? I haven't seen one in Yeah, so there's a good mention there of .NET 1.1. So when you look at your .NET versions that you have on, say, Server 2012, you've got 2.x there, right? You don't have 1.x. So if you've got a 1.1 application, you're going to have to recompile for sure.
When you're migrating to a new target server, how do you know how clients are accessing that application? For instance, right now they hit a server name via DNS name, maybe, or by direct IP. When the new target server is provisioned, it has new server name, new IP. How do you know, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, so the answer is without some exploration, maybe you don't, right? It comes down to knowing who the end user is, and that's actually really important. When we move the application over to the target system, typically what we're doing is moving that into some sort of staging area. And we're providing an alternate means of access. So if my user's hitting an IP address or a DNS name, I give them an alternate DNS name or an alternate IP address, and I have an end user who, you know, maybe doesn't know a lot about the technical workings of the application, use the application to make sure that it's functional. And if I'm not going to use a tool like BlueStripe, I might be using something like a netstat to make sure that it's talking to the databases I think it's talking to and so forth.
So in the end, are you renaming the server or just maybe creating a static DNS entry for original server name now that points to new IP?
So we're really focusing on moving the applications, right? Not the server itself. So yeah, I'm using a new server name and I'm using a static DNS entry that I'm giving my end user, and maybe I'm having them come to a new DNS name typically in order to just exercise the application and make sure it's functional.
Got it. Is there anything in the realm of that kind of application discovery mapping from a client endpoint perspective?
The BlueStripe tool is the best thing I've seen for that. Our other methods tend to be a little bit less scientific. They tend to be things like running netstats to see, you know, dumping our ports out, just what our connections are. Dumping out a list of our ODBC system DSNs to see what sort of database entries we have there, which incidentally you can just pick up out of the registry. So ODBC DSNs are actually easy to spot, but it's going to be a little bit more rudimentary for sure.
Got it. Thanks.
Yeah, you bet. So you hear a lot of important points there. Sadly, you know, there are some things we can't discover manually, and so there is going to be an element of, you know, understanding the application does from a migration perspective. I'm actually just going to go out and grab one of my recorded versions of this demo so I can get you through the whole process here. We're still good on time, it looks like. So I will jump out here, and I'm going to take you through a SQL Server quick. So this will be about 5 minutes, and we can have a good chat here. So again, what we're doing here is not at all about application virtualization. I have a Windows 2000 system in this example, and I'm going to migrate that Windows 2000 instance over to a copy of a modern version of Windows, so anywhere it will run. In fact, we even find in some cases, like moving SQL 2005, SQL 2005 will actually run on SQL Server 2012, but you may not be able to install it there manually. So I'm going to stop the service on my source system. Again, that's to deal with those, alleviate those file locks. I'm going to create my virtual application appliance. It's simply that folder with all of the discovered binaries that show up on my system there. And I'm going to start the tethering process. So this docset virtual application appliance does the discovery and allows me to begin to exercise this application. Again, it's not app virtualization, but I can't help but go back to sequencing apps in AppV. So this is going to go begin to explore that remote system. What you're going to find when we move the application over to the target, your registry keys are going to be a match. So if you have a 32-bit 32-bit source going to a 64-bit target, if the application itself is 32-bit, you want to remember to go down in the syswow 64 area in the registry, right? So here you see it's moving over the local administrator password. If you're a PCI shop, make sure you pre-create whatever that service account identity is so you can set that password. So now we're going to use the CLI to just launch Service Manager, make sure that SQL is here, and if it's not running, to go ahead and start it up. So by default, after that move happens, the service actually shouldn't be running, and we'll have to go ahead and start it manually the first time. So at this point, I'm docking the virtual application appliance. So now we're going to see the services show up, bam, right there in Services Manager. So it's just as though this application is locally installed. I'm going to start the app. If all is well, it's going to run. I can then launch my SQL Management Studio, connect to the instance, make sure that it's functional. But I'm actually exercising the application on purpose here. I want to open the UI, I want to right-click the menus and so forth, because what I'm doing there is helping App Zero discover if there are any binaries that got left behind, right? So it does a great job of finding all the necessaries. But this just gives us a little extra assurance that everything has been discovered. So at this point, I'm going to launch my application prompt, and I'm just going to browse to my source here on the target. I'm going to launch my UI and begin to do that actual exercise. So as we go through this process, once we are satisfied that the application is functional on the target, right, that we've exercised it, we've had the end user who actually leverages this component come and check it out, and it literally looks a lot like that. I frequently find that there's a conference room where the project team is working. There are some staging servers, and we sit an end user down. They do a little exercising. We ask them to just, tell us about their experience, and occasionally they will feed us a bit of knowledge about the other systems that this application talks to and other groups that might be still depending on that. So that's just some of my very non-scientific notes from the field. It's great to get the user in front of you when you do that talking. So you see here, I'm on my target system. I'm going to connect to the local SQL instance and make sure it's actually up and running and functional. And there you see that I see my databases. I can connect into those. My tables are there. It's all good. Once you've exercised the application, you're satisfied it's working, we can actually do what we call dissolving this appliance. What I can do is stop my virtual application appliance, and I can dissolve that little bubble, which means that this application, in this case, my SQL instance, is going to simply dissolve locally into this version of Windows. So it means when you go to the program files directory on this system, you will see SQL Server there. When you go to Services Manager, you'll see MS SQL Server there. When you go to the registry, you'll see your SQL Server keys and values. What won't you see? Go to Programs and Features. You actually won't see the uninstall button, which is nothing to worry about. You know, we can still run the SQL installer and potentially uninstall, right? So right here, we're going through a bit of exercising and finding our problems, and this will go through the dissolve process here in just a second. Has anybody yet wondered about support? I haven't heard anybody. You've asked some great questions, but nobody has said, hey, does Microsoft support this? Does anybody want the answer to that question? Good for you. Good for you. So I saw a lot of shaking heads. Right, because we're at the pointy end of the stick here, right? We're at the edge where we have apps that we can't get moved over quite any other way. So this is going to be that more challenging subset, and we're going to be looking for that long-term strategy for how we make these applications functional in our 2012 environment in the long term. So, and I tend to not overthink that, right? Your line of business applications that you developed internally, Microsoft doesn't support those anyway, right? That's you supporting those. And that's really what this comes down to, is as we're getting to that end of support, it comes down to getting to a functional state more than a perfect world where we're happy and supported 100% all around. John?
I'm conscious we're coming up against people's flight time, so what I'd like to do is close the session out, give you the QR code. We really, really appreciate feedback and the reviews of the session, but then we'll open up the mics and we'll stay here as long as you want for Q&A. So we've covered a lot of material today. The session will be available online as all tech ed sessions, so you can kind of cover the four-step process. You can take some of that stuff away. We also have a resource online that is kind of a work in progress. But we're gathering quite a lot of knowledge from people like Pete and from customers, and we're building into the tool, which is a web tool, basically takes you through the steps, lets you review for your environment some of the recommendations and tools. And we're compiling a lot of partner offers into that as well, specific to the different phases, to the different workloads you're running. So that's something to check out. Standard resources slide, you've seen that enough this week, so I'm not going to dwell on that. Complete the eval and insta win, and there is the QR code. So if anyone needs to go, please do that with our blessing, but we'd love to stay and have a great discussion. And thanks, I hope you had a great tech ed and safe travels. Thanks. And now the questions. So let me see if I can repeat that. So the question is, how do you convince someone to upgrade their application? So let me see if I can repeat the question again for the video. How do you convince somebody who has an application running on 2003 that they're completely happy with? Yep. They don't want to move it, they just see cost. Yep. Okay. So then we fall back to some of the points in the video, in that the operating system is unsupported. And you know, if you look at XP, we've just been through the end of support for XP. There are no security fixes. So, you know, unfortunately, there was the Internet Explorer issues that we saw recently, you know, and there is no patch for that. And I think that was a wake-up call for people that, you know, you will become more and more exposed, unfortunately, because the product has reached the end of support. So while that application's running there, it's providing value, but the underlying operating system is no longer supported and is no longer getting security fixes. Plus, there are the issues about compliance, potentially, depending on which industry and which regulations you have to abide with. Pete, do you want?
Yeah, so the security exposure to the organization is precisely where we drill in, right? So on your project team, you're going to have some adjacent project stakeholders with titles like director, right? And so you're typically going to leverage your management, you know, IT and the business units to go back to that application owner and have a serious discussion about the exposure to the organization because their legacy application is sitting where it's sitting. It kind of becomes a badge of shame for them, and it's sad that it has to come down to that sometimes, but in the nicest way you can, that's... Wow, so you have a little Bastille deal of your own. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's tough.
Yeah, exactly. But then ultimately what happens is there will be a security exposure at some point, which will hit the news, and then suddenly you wish you'd done it earlier. Yeah. Any more questions? We have Pete here with years of experience migrating.
So we've had a couple
I have
of...
A
Yeah, you have a non-existent vendor, and yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you use AppZero to get it over, then you kick off an exploratory committee to go find a new way to... Nice, okay.
So is anybody not going to move off Windows Server 2003? Is anybody considering just staying there? Doesn't have a choice. No? Okay.
Yeah, that SQL migration that we had recorded there was actually on Windows 2000. It's really similar. I was surprised to hear NT4 still in the crowd there. Yeah, it's that customer service mentality, right? It adds a lot of time. It adds time to the migration process, but it really it's a risk mitigation technique. You get your application owner in there to help you, test the application. You let them tell you, what they know, and a lot of times they'll tell you about other people that might use it or other applications. The one I love is where they tell you about other applications that depend on your application, and you're thinking, oh man, how would I have ever, discovered that? So dependencies can be multiple applications deep sometimes.
Okay. Well, if we dried out the room questions, maybe you guys have got one-to-one questions for Pete, so I'll let you do that, or I'll let you go, and just say thanks and safe travels again. Thank you.